We talk Florida State, Boston College. We talk LSU, USC, Michigan, Texas, and an update on the $1.5 million chicken wing heist.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Other than the papaya juice extract game,
Ross Dellinger.
This has got to be the most bizarre, unusual way to fund a gambling problem.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Whatever it takes to, quote unquote, piss him off.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and I got to start with Twitter, former Twitter participant, at 321 Noel. You guys see this guy? 321 Noel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Put out a little tweet the other day, 827, August 27th at 1142 a.m. He got on the old Twitter. And at 321, Noel said, if Florida State loses to BC this weekend, I will eat dog out of a red Solo cup with a spoon and post a video of me doing it. Book it! Exclamation point. Well.
We did book it.
Guess who no longer is a Twitter subscriber?
Yeah.
At 321 Noel no longer exists. The sleuths over at Barstool are, I need to say, on it. Because he got served a red Solo cup. He and all of the Seminoles, a red Solo cup. He apparently is saying, see you next year. He's just done. But he's gone. We don't know. Do you have to eat it? Do you not? Pat, does this man have to eat for our enjoyment, or do you just quit? I think he did the right thing. Just run.
He got served a red Solo cup of shut up, yeah. That's for sure. This one, that much like the Seminoles themselves, a lot of talking, not a lot backing it up. We heard all offseason, Florida State too good for the ACC. Now, not just 17th and last, but 0-2. In the league, and it's going to be a while till anybody else gets down to 0-2, I think. I haven't looked at all the schedules. So, 3-2-1, Noel, excellent time to disappear. You know what? Erase your online profile and keep it low for the foreseeable future.
I think it'd be great to have this on the on the pod, have him on the pod with the Solo cup and just shoveling dog poop.
We will host it if you decide to fulfill your whatever this is.
Would we be violating any like FCC regulations?
I don't probably health standards.
Is it? Maybe it'll be worth him. Maybe he's a pod listener. And it's worth him to get on the pod to do this thing. But you know who looked like dog? The Noles. I'm sure we're going to get to it, but what stunned me about that game was not the quarterback play, but the fact that it was just gashed on defense.
Yeah, a lot of heat on DJU, who certainly has not turned out to be what the Noles were expecting, but he does not play defense. And this was Boston College just utterly dominating, 263 yards, 52 carries, 39 minutes of play, dominant offensive line position. The defensive line of Florida State was supposed to be this vaunted crew. Didn't happen. The offensive line for Florida State didn't happen. 21 yards on 16 carries. I can't say you blame it all on QB. This program is it's a mess right now. We'll get to BC because it was a great win. And a tone setter and a statement for Bill O'Brien nationally, much like Georgia Tech was a week ago. Florida State has served its purpose. Plaintiff number one is 0-2, as Pat pointed out on Twitter. Plaintiff number two is 0-1. The rest of the ACC kind of enjoying all of this. Too good for the ACC. They ain't beating anybody else. They ain't beating anybody. Both programs in complete disarray since they decided to sue their conference. I mean, I don't know who's more miserable right now, Clemson fan or Florida State fan. Although I don't know any Clemson fans that had to run for their lives, so they need a red Solo cup full of that. So at least Clemson fan keeping their head about them a little bit better, a little more.
Yeah, a little better.
A little better. Where's Tyler from Spartanburg?
A little more understandable to lose to the two-time national champion Georgia Bulldogs than Georgia Tech and Boston College, too. Yeah.
Fair point. Yeah. Fair point. Pat, what do you think of the Seminoles here?
Yeah, I thought a really, pretty surreal scene to see Boston College, of all programs, go into Tallahassee and take mercy on Florida State at the end of the game by taking a knee at the 5 instead of putting another touchdown on the board to basically say, all right, our work here is done. We have dominated Florida State, and we're going to take it easy on them. We're going to avoid humiliating them further. So that was a profound statement on both programs. But for Florida State, this is just, it seems like to me, an offseason of gross miscalculation of what they thought they were good at, of what they thought they needed, of who they are. I mean, it's just astounding to me that they could crater to this extent right off the bat and lose 2 ACC games. And we said they were lucky to really be in the game to the end against Georgia Tech. And then they got flat out dominated by Boston flipping college here. So the line play is atrocious on both sides, as you guys pointed out. They cannot stop the run. They cannot run. And when those two things are true, you're in a world of hurt in college football. It's just hard to fix during a season. You can get marginally better. You can maybe scheme some things up to cover up some deficiencies. But if you can't run and you can't stop the run and opponents know it, that's the easiest thing to exploit. So Florida State has got a long season ahead, and that fan base is actively losing their minds given the high horse they rode in on.
Yeah, I think they've allowed, through 2 games, almost 500 yards of rushing. This just kind of stunning, especially, again, noting the competition that they played. So still left on the schedule are certainly plenty of teams like Miami, Clemson and those type of teams. So you wonder, you know, what the end record might look like for Florida State. It's just surprising. And I think Mike Norvell was asked after the game about a quarterback change, or if he thought about a quarterback change, didn't really give a direct answer. But you do wonder if there's something that I think the crowd was chanting for the backup, Brock.
Yeah, we want Brock Lynn. We want Brock, yeah.
Yeah, certainly not the start that DJU, I'm sure, imagined with this Florida State transfer.
17 transfers into Florida State. Last year's team was transfer heavy, and I mean, they hit. Now, a lot of those guys are there 2 years, but some weren't. And it was like a straight flush and bang, you're 12-0. I think we may see more of this type of spiking of teams. You live by the portal, you die by the portal. You might hit on these guys, but like when you're building a football team through recruiting, you're spending multiple years scouting players, getting to know players, getting to know their parents, their high school coaches. What is this bang? We got this guy. What do we think of this guy? The portal is it's a craps game. It is. You got 3 days and you got to just grab whatever you can get. And I don't know that you can. I think the challenge is, how do I find these guys that are going to work together, that aren't here just for the money, who aren't looking and saying, oh, I mean, look, the entire Florida State defensive line last year is playing for the LA Rams now, or at least 2 of them. But, you know, it's like, hey, I'm just going to pop in. I'll be in the pros in a year. I'll make a quick, you know, $500,000 or whatever I'm going to get. And that's their mindset, not where to build a team to win. Like, how do you this is football. It's not fantasy football. And so I think this is the challenge for all teams. And we've said all along, like, this is the bit. How do you put a team together in 2 weeks in the portal? Now, there is a lot with Florida State. They've recruited well, but clearly they haven't recruited well enough. You'd rather build through recruiting and then pick your spots than sit there and say, we need a big overhaul. We're just going to hit it every single time, and we're going to be 11-1 every single year. I don't know that that's possible.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Dan, that there is a poker hand sort of dynamic at work here, where you may get dealt great cards, you may get dealt bad cards. You may play your hand well, you may play it poorly. Florida State could be an example. TCU 2022, I'm not sure they're like massive portal, but they went from 13-2, I believe it was, to losing record last year. We'll see if they're rebounding this year. Michigan State, when they hit it with Kenneth Walker III, and then bounced out of that group, and it was like, ooh, yikes, what happened? So I think there's probably plenty of reason, and coaches aren't dumb, they know this, to believe that the main thing we've got to do is work through high school recruiting and then supplement as best we can and be smart about it and be judicious. Maybe get, you know, guys we already have existing relationships with, because, you know, when you're swiping Tinder, as you alluded to, and it's like, ah, that looks good. And then you go on the date, it's like, oh my gosh, this person's a psychopath, you know, or whatever. That's just not gonna work. If you're making decisions on the fly based on kind of panic shopping, it just, you're setting yourself up.
Well, and I think it was Saban who said it on game day, right? If you spend your money, your portal money, your NIL money on portal players, on the wrong players, if you invest in the wrong players out of the portal, you'll be shit out of luck. And maybe that's what we've seen from some teams. Maybe that's what we see down in Tallahassee.
Small sample
Keeping
Heisman
up our poo-poo
for
theme of the
yeah
day
small here. Sample Heisman for SHIT. It's getting a lot of lot of play this week. Well, okay. One of the stories of this early season, two players from the Pac-2, two quarterbacks that were left behind, DJU from Oregon State, Cam Ward from Washington State. One goes to Miami. Cam Ward looks unbelievable. One goes to Florida State. DJ doesn't look so good, you know, and it's like, which guy did you want last year? I think most people wanted Cam Ward more, but you would not think that disparity would be so significant. So that is the situation. Quickly on Boston College, they look great. I mean, I don't care what FSU may be a 6-win team. I don't care. For Boston College, this was an unbelievable night to showcase. Bill O'Brien, we said, I thought pound for pound was the best hire of the offseason. I'm not saying he's a better, Alabama got Kalen DeBoer right off the national championship. Better hire, right? But Alabama's going to get that coach. Boston College got a guy who was a successful coach at Penn State under unbelievable circumstances, a 4-time playoff trips with the Houston Texans, won a couple games, worked for Bill Belichick and Nick Saban, coached Heisman winners, Tom Brady, Super Bowls, national playoffs, and had almost 100% name recognition because of all his work with the New England Patriots up in New England, where they need to have their base, and is from Boston. Unbelievable hire. You could see the stamp of this program. They got one penalty. The lines were tremendous. Two kids from Norwell, Mass, dominating Florida State. Never thought I'd see that. Just saying. End of the game. They made a point of it it was an NFL way to end the game. Games won, take a knee. College, I mean, you know, we see Colorado still throwing the ball downfield, people are trying to pad stats. They're trying to score. They don't know how to do it. O'Brien's got the calc. No, we're done. We're done here. NFL, you win by one, you win by 100. Doesn't matter. You could see this was a professional-looking operation at Boston College. I'm not going to put them in the playoff or anything, but, boy, that's a nice day one return on investment for a program that has not seen much since, you know, there was, like, the red bandana victory over USC. There was some great years with Matt Ryan. It hadn't been a whole lot.
No, it was an awesome moment for them. Just really a very impressive all-around performance. And you're right. I think we were all very high on the O'Brien hire to begin with. I think it was a real coup for BC to get him, and he's such a good fit there that You know, you give him a chance. And that one of the best things, obviously, that he did, like some other places where new coaches came in, thinking specifically of Arizona, you keep your quarterback. You know, Thomas Castellanos, I don't know if there was a huge market for him, but surely some people in the portal would have been interested in him. He's short, but he's a very good dual threat player. And I think if you give Bill O'Brien a quarterback to build around, he'll make it work, whatever the quarterback style is. And he's a dual threat guy, but he was very effective. 73 yards rushing and a touchdown, 106 yards passing and two touchdowns there. And let him build an offense that way. And then he's going to have a professional organization. It's just going to be buttoned up. It's going to be well run. You're going to add players where you can. And BC is going to probably be as good as it can be as long as it can keep Bill O'Brien there.
Yeah, I wonder if Bill O'Brien, who obviously known, you know, for his offense, and I wonder if he looked at, I'm sure they watched that Georgia Tech game, right? And was like, oh, this is easy. We're just going to run the ball. and man, they just pounded it. And in an assortment of ways, too. I was pulling up a stat. They ran the ball. This is crazy. They ran the ball 12 times on first down. Boston College did. And it was like the opposite game plan of what Florida State did. It just didn't run the ball, didn't give the ball to their tailbacks at all. And BC did the opposite. And they were just so patient in doing it. You could tell they didn't mind doing it. They had confidence in doing it. They gained almost, 5 yards of rush. It was just, yeah, 5.1. It was dumb. Yeah, it was incredible. And they again, just you're talking about a coach who obviously knows a lot about offense and schemed up well and thought, you know what, let's not get cute here and let's just pound the ball. That's what Georgia Tech did. And that's what you got to do, obviously, against Florida State because they can't stop it.
Margins in the NFL are so tight, you rarely get a mismatch where you're just like, we can do this. But when they do, they'll do it all day. It's nothing. He knew. And it was the interior of that line.
Yeah.
I mean, they just went straight up that key. There was a moment in that game where FSU got it to a touchdown, one score, 13, maybe 21. And then there was a bad, stupid penalty on a kickoff. And then it was just right up the middle, touchdown, like, you know, 6-7 plays later, touchdown. Quote of the weekend, we had some guys play their butts off tonight, and we're sitting here again. We're sitting here talking about the same things. Pound the table. Brian Kelly channels my mood while I do this podcast every time with you two. You are my spirit animal, Brian. What is going on? I'm angry. You're both out in Vegas, various levels of sobriety. Speaking of bad trips, there's been bad trips to Vegas. People have had bad trips to Vegas. They've left with regret, lack of purpose, injuries, pounding tables.
You see them at the airport, Dan. Just sitting at their gate, you know, and they're just, their face, they're just wearing it. They're wearing Vegas on their face.
I used to do this trip where I'd go to Yahoo meetings up in Sunnyvale, California, in the Bay Area. And there was a flight. I could take a red eye back, but I had to go San Jose to Vegas and get the red eye. And I would show up to get the red eye in Vegas, and I would have not been in Vegas, right? I'm just connecting. Mm-hmm. And you get to the midnight flight back to, and it was like the people just sprawled out, just work. You're like, man, this town. When you come in with sober eyes, you're like, oh no, look at these people. They're just done. Puddles are just, they're sleeping on the floor. Guys got, I just blew my mortgage. Like, they smell of smoke and everything. You're just like, oh, this flight is awful. What does this town do? Pat, what is happening with Brian Kelly? He's angry.
I will say, I barely did Vegas. I flew in Sunday morning, wasn't feeling very good. Heroically did the Overreaction podcast with you all, and then covered the game, and then flew out Monday. Didn't place a single wager. And when I got to the airport, they originally said, my flight out was D-42. I go to D-42, and that actually is a flight that's going to Baton Rouge. And yes, the defeated detritus that was slumped around at that gate, oh, that was a rough bunch. That was a bunch that came in with high hopes and more money and left broke and 0-1. So that was a rough scene there. But, you know, it was a really good game. I thought it was a very good game. I didn't walk away from that down on LSU and down on Brian Kelly, really. You know, I mean, I know they are 0-1 3 years in a row now with Kelly, and they've lost. They take on these good games, and they don't win them. They lost to Florida State twice, and now they've lost to USC. And certainly in two of the three of those season openers under Kelly, you could make a case they could have, should have won. Absolutely the first one against Florida State. And then this one, you know, they had the lead, and they gave up two touchdown drives in the last half of the fourth quarter. And I get him being angry, and I get LSU fans being angry because that's what they do when they lose. But they're fine. They're okay. They're going to be fine, I think. And I'm more impressed with USC than I am distressed by LSU.
Yeah, same. USC's defense was kind of the star of the game in a way for me. I mean, obviously Miller Moss played incredibly well. Both quarterbacks did, but the improvement in USC's defense, just in tackling, especially up front. And they had some one-on-one tackles too in space that they made that the last few years just didn't seem like a USC program makes. So that was huge to see for them and for their future this year. But Pat might feel the same way. We're up in the press box of that game, and it's 17-13, you know, late in the third quarter, early in the fourth quarter, and LSU twice takes over with drives up four, and they started to run the ball well, a little better, got it going, and you thought, well, this is over. Like, and we were talking with the people around me in the press box. Like, we've seen this show before, about to be like a 9-play, you know, 70-yard drive with 7 runs, and LSU's going to score a touchdown and win the game and put it away. And that's what felt like usually happens in a game kind of like that, especially with USC. But give it up again, going back, circling back to the USC's defense. LSU had a 3rd-and-1 around the 40 on one of those drives, lost a yard. LSU had a 3rd-and-6 in a great open field tackle to hold it to 3 yards and force another punt. So give it up for USC's defense. That was impressive. But yeah, the LSU folks, who I heard from quite a few after the game, we're not happy. You know, I think if you're an LSU fan, you take away from that game that offensively you have some really big weapons. You have a quarterback that is pretty sharp. And defensively, you know, I think you're improved from last season. It feels like that. It seems like they're improved. The one issue was late in the game. You couldn't run the ball. And you struggled to run the ball the whole game, really. And that was the thing that came out of that game for the LSU side. While USC is probably celebrating having the offensive weapons that it thought and having an improved defense, I think LSU probably came away from that game same thing, right? Improved defense, offensive weapons, but oh my goodness, we can't run the ball. And with a veteran experienced offensive line, one of the most experienced in the country, could not run the ball late when it mattered, and that was kind of the difference. And that is demoralizing when you look at LSU's schedule.
Yeah, I thought it was a great game. It was a great game to watch. I'm sure it was a great game to be at live on TV. It was just really great quarterback play by Miller Moss and Nussmeier, back and forth. You didn't know what was going to happen. And it's sort of, to me, this is what we want, particularly as we get into this playoff. Like, this doesn't hurt anybody. Right. You know, you don't have to do this. Let's rig the schedule to go 12-0 or 13-0. I think LSU, I get Brian Kelly angry because he didn't win the game. And I kind of like it. Doesn't matter to me if he hits the table. People get all fired up with Brian Kelly, but
he created a meme.
Created a meme. Oh sure. My God.
Yes.
And somebody screenshotted right when he hit the table, and the water bottle in front of him flew into the air. And they've got the screenshot is the water bottle off of the table, just it dispelled in midair. It's great.
It landed though, right?
I guess so. It did not spill. Yeah. I don't believe.
Good feet. Yeah.
Impressive effort by the water bottle.
Resilient Dasani or whatever it was. Yeah, I mean, it was a good game. I think you get more out of that than beating somebody 70-0, right? So I don't think it's bad. But I think USC's got to feel really good about the, you know, it's all been, do they have the stuff in the trenches? Can they go up against these Big Ten teams? Well, they went up against LSU and did fine. Very happy for Miller Moss. You know, 3 years he sat in the program, worked. He's a real cerebral player. A kid really enjoys USC. I know I've read some different stuff on him, and he loves the school. He wants to be a college student. He's into chess, all these different things. And, you know, he goes into last year, the season ends. Caleb will obviously sits behind Caleb Williams, whatever, is the number one draft pick. Lincoln Riley has a press conference before the bowl game. I mean, right at the end of the season, says, I'm going to bring in two transfer quarterbacks. Well, you know, I've been here. Hey, coach. And then again, the Holiday Bowl, and he wins the job. And he's the next day, Lincoln Riley calls him. Now he's scared. Miller Moss is going to leave, right? He calls him and says, hey, I'm not taking any veteran quarterbacks, right? And the job was wide open for him, and now he's got it. And he looks tremendous. And so I love those types of stories.
Yeah, very happy for Miller Moss, who has put in his time there and gotten his chance, got better. Capitalized when he got the opportunity. And yeah, Lincoln Riley's tried to recruit over him, and they brought in Malachi Nelson, was the five-star guy that was supposed to be the next guy, you know, replacing Caleb Williams. That didn't work out. They did bring in Jaden Maiava from UNLV, and he's not beating out Miller Moss, and Miller has played extremely well in his two starts as USC Trojan. He was very emotional after the game on the field, and then he just kind of bottled that all up, and he was really kind of bland in the post-game press conference. We were hoping for a little more.
We were walking out hoping we were getting a little more, but no.
Vultures. Yeah. Media vultures.
That's right.
Cry, kid, just cry.
Be happy for us. Come on.
Yeah.
But no, it was a very good performance by USC in general. And D'Anton Lynn. Do we have a rising coaching star? He's 34 years old. He's the son of Anthony Lynn, who was the head coach of the Chargers, has been in the NFL forever. He was the DC last year for UCLA, and their defense got unbelievably better. So Lincoln Riley, big play, goes across town, swipes him, brings him over, and at least after one game, their defense is unbelievably better. They tackled well, which USC, I think, was the worst tackling team in the country in 2022 and 2023. And they made open field tackles. They made tackles in gaps. They were tough up the middle. They covered. They had a couple of busts, but you know, they were tough in the red zone. I just thought it was an incredible performance that makes me say, D'Anton Lynn knows what he's doing. Holy moly. They brought in six defensive starters via the portal. And then the bunch of other guys who were 2023 transfers in. So Lincoln said massive changes defensively, and they have been massive, but they're working. That's what impressed me. And one other quick note on LSU's offense. Kyren Lacy was unbelievable in the first half, and then they didn't get him the ball. And I don't know whether that was, you know, I didn't study it while the game was going on, but whether that was an adjustment that Lynn made to say we're taking him away, or they just didn't even really press the issue to get him the ball. And the other thing, LSU has elite tackles, Will Campbell and Emory Jones. They're better pass-blocking tackles than run-blocking tackles, I think. And that's Will Campbell's going to make a ton of money as a left tackle in the NFL. But they didn't get a lot of push, I didn't think, as run-blockers. Neither the guys inside of them, guard to guard. So that's an area, you know, Ross talked about. They didn't run the ball well. Their line may just not be built to pound people.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. The Anton Lynn hire, obviously, maybe one of the best coordinator hires, maybe the best one that we saw in the offseason. It had a lot of buzz around it. Took him from UCLA. Lincoln Riley did. And Lincoln Riley almost sounded surprised in his own defense afterward. that they trusted the system, and the new players trusted the system like they did on a big stage. And it was just, I kind of wrote this, but it was kind of almost like he internally was saying, did we really do that? Are we sure that was us? It's just kind of what it felt like. But yeah, that was one of the most impressive things. And look, there were a lot of, back to Miller Moss real quick. I mean, there were a lot of great quarterback play week one. We saw plenty of great stats. And maybe I'm biased because I was just at the game, but I think his performance was the best on that stage against a defense at LSU that's been improved. And he just made some really, really good throws. And he put his receivers in great spots to make phenomenal catches, which they did. Kyron Hudson had two catches that were the best. I mean, the two catches in that game from him might end up being two of the best we see all season. The one-handed catch and then the catch late on the drive that set up the game-winning touchdown where he was just hit. He was targeted, literally targeted, and he hung on to the ball. And again, that catch was like a perfect throw in stride from Miller Moss. It was, yeah, if I'm Big Ten defenses, I'm a little anxious for that game against those USC players. And if they can play defensively and tackle like we saw, they can win that league for sure.
Yeah, impressive. All right, we got a Diego Pavea update. We'll get to right after this message.
Mexico Tinkler.
You know we love Diego. Pat's the Albuquerque Tinkler because he did some stuff on the – playing for New Mexico State, not NC State. New Mexico State, he's on the logo at the New Mexico thing, becomes a legend, wins the game, goes to Vanderbilt. Somebody in Vanderbilt is just messing with them, and they know how to push the buttons. So here is a quote by Brent Pry, the Virginia Tech coach, before the Virginia Tech-Vanderbilt game. And we didn't get this on the overreaction show because we missed it, but he is praising how good Diego is as a player. This guy is the ultimate competitor. He's tough as nails. You know, he extends plays and he's got no fear. Now, Brent Pry used to coach at Penn State. He reminds me a little bit of a guy we had at Penn State named Trace McSorley, kind of the way he plays the game. Very determined quarterback. Now, this is quite a nice quote. Who wouldn't want the opposing coach saying things like that about it? Also quite accurate to the way he plays. After beating Virginia Tech, Diego says, some people over there, meaning Virginia Tech, called me a poor man's Trace McSorley. When you stop me, then you can talk. Now, 2 points. One, no one called him a poor man's Trace McSorley. He says he played like he reminds me a little bit of a guy we had, Trace McSorley. So he got somebody threw some fake news at Diego. Poor Brent. Are you catching? Two, Trace McSorley's put a little respect on the guy's name. He won 31 games at Penn State and made it 4 years in the NFL, albeit as a backup. He's not Patrick Mahomes, but poor man's Trace McSorley's pretty damn good. This is motivational genius, is it not, Pat? Does Diego even know who Trace McSorley is?
I don't know, but yeah, there's a lot of quarterbacks who would love to be compared to Trace McSorley. That guy was a really good college player, and as you said, he's been in the NFL. But this probably goes into the rich history of coaches, if need be, exaggerating, embellishing,
yes,
doctoring a quote to turn it into bulletin board material.
Fire up the team, yeah.
Yeah. Look, they don't think you're any good.
They think you're Trace McSorley.
Yeah.
You're a transfer from New Mexico State. Poor Trace McSorley, too. He's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
How did I get involved in this?
He's getting dragged into this, yeah. And that's – which quarterback in New Mexico State history wouldn't like to be compared to Trace McSorley?
Yeah.
So it's a high compliment, frankly, for Diego. But whatever it takes to, quote-unquote, piss him off.
Yeah. Let him go. Good one.
Certainly worked. All right. Speaking of quarterbacks, biggest game this weekend is Texas at Michigan. Should be excellent. And Michigan quarterback has been the storyline. Who's going to play quarterback for Michigan? And they had kind of a surprise starter on against Fresno State. Sharon Moore went with Davis Warren. And Davis Warren, let me tell you the story. You probably know nothing about him because he was one of these guys they kept saying, everyone thought it'd be Alex Orji would be the starter. He's in competition with all these guys. And everyone waits because they don't want the kids to transfer out, right? So I kind of was like, yeah, Davis Warren, what? Davis Warren was a high school sophomore, and he got leukemia, 2019. Gets leukemia and has to go under radiation and all that, or chemo, whatever. Loses 40 pounds and all his hair. Comes back. He's determined to come back and play. It actually was going to be his senior year. He ends up reclassifying, but what it turns out to be his junior year. He's determined to play in 2019 because he's trying to get tape out there and stuff like that. He's playing at a school in New Jersey. He gets back on the field, but he's only 160 pounds. He gets back for the middle of the season, but he has to take blood tests every week to see whether he's capable of getting out on the field, like whatever the blood work shows. Okay. Second to last game, they're playing Princeton Hun School, which is a big program. This would be a big opportunity for him. He does not get the blood work right. He sees on the internet some story that if you drink papaya juice extract, it can help. So he orders a ton of papaya juice extract off of Amazon.
Holy
moly. Loads up on it during the game, all week, and passes his blood test. All right. Steps in, goes 5 of 6, 126 yards, okay? Plays the game. This is how much he wants to play. But still, he's nothing. There's something happens in the program. The coach leaves. A bunch of the players leave. So he needs a new school. So he goes to Suffield up in Connecticut, which has a ton of D1 players. And they had Tyler Van Dyke went there, who played, I think he was at Miami recently and all different, you know, he's a college program. So the coaches there know what a D1 player looks like. And he shows up, but it's for 2020. There's no season, right? No COVID comes. He's got no season. So he's got some practice footage with these guys at Suffield. They start talking around to coaches, and they're trying to hype him up. Otherwise, he's either heading to the Patriot League or maybe Duke. Duke was kind of in on it too. He moves back to LA, and he's taking online classes. He takes his SAT one Saturday, comes home, and Jim Harbaugh has called and says, I'm going to offer you, I saw some practice tape, and they're talking you up over here at this other school, at this school, preferred walk-on to Michigan, right? So he takes the preferred walk-on. He's in J.J. McCarthy's class. Freshman year, scout team player of the year. Apparently spends all his time with Cade McNamara watching film, all this stuff and stuff. 2022, he gets in and goes 5 for 9. Last year, he gets in and is 0 for 5 with a pick. That was his stats last year. 0 for 5 with a pick. And then somehow wins the Michigan job. So we have a leukemia survivor, a papaya juice extract aficionado, a preferred walk-on, a scout team player of the year, and he's now the starting quarterback going up against Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning in the game of the week. Now, this is why I love college football, is crazy stories like this, right? Now, this will not get him 1 yard against the Longhorns, mind you, okay? We'll see what reality may come at noon, but I love stuff like this. What a story by this guy.
That's fantastic. A lot of backstory I did not know there, and good for him. I mean, the leukemia thing's incredible. The papaya juice part sounds a little Connor Stallions-esque. It's like, how far are we going to take this here?
That's probably why Harbaugh heard the papaya juice story. It was, oh, yeah, I know about that. Yeah.
That, I guarantee, that sounds like the kind of thing that could tip the scales and say, I'm offering that guy a walk-on.
A lot of this is from Ryan Zook from MLive. I read about this. It was an old story when they signed, or that he committed. But anyway, so go ahead.
But, yeah, no, you know, I watched parts of that Michigan game off and on, quarterback play, But and as a matter of fact, I think the graphic they showed which had Alex Orji in the starting lineup on NBC, and then out comes Davis Warren. So there was a little bit of trickeration there from Michigan. But, you know, we'll see what they roll out. They're going to have to be better than they were against Fresno. But, you know, give them a chance. I'll be there. I'll be there in the big house. Dan, I think you'll be there as well, right?
I will be there. Yes.
Yeah. I'll be on my couch.
You'll be on your couch. Thoughts on Texas, Michigan? Early thoughts. We'll pick the game later in the week, Ross.
Yeah, well, they're good. Like Pat said, they're going to have to be better, right? I mean, Davis Warren is a great story, but 15 of 25, 118 yards and a touchdown, interceptions. Probably not going to beat Texas, so they've got to be better there. I know they ran the ball pretty consistently against Fresno, but all around, they're going to be faced with a pretty big test here from Texas and a Texas defensive front. It'll probably be the biggest right game in Davis's career by far, I'm sure. So
other than the papaya juice extract game.
Yeah. That's pretty wild. You do love those stories. And hey, we probably won't have as many of those walk-on turn starting quarterback for a big blue blood power like that. We won't have as many in the future with the changes coming to college athletics. So it's good to see it. And that was one of the bigger quarterback surprises, I think, of the of week one, is that he got not just the first snap, but played pretty much the whole game.
They brought Orji in for 9 plays. So that, you know, and Orji maybe was more running. He did throw a little, you know, we'll see. They're trying to piece it together, obviously. This Texas team looked just fantastic against Colorado State. And there's a real chance for, I think, Texas to make it. Michigan's got a nice defense. They have some elite. They may have the best cornerback. They may have the best tight end in Colston Loveland, and Will Johnson. They got a great D-line. They got some unbelievable talent. I don't know if they've got enough to handle what Texas has got, which just looks on paper, and then what they showed against Colorado State to be pretty awesome. All right, one other big game you're going to hear a lot about this week is Colorado visiting Nebraska. There's much to be made. This is obviously an old rivalry. Deion Sanders said he loved it because this was a game that old rivals when he remembers watching when he was younger. It is two different ways to build a program, which I think is getting a ton of hype. Matt Rhule is focused very much on recruiting high school players and building up, although not exclusively, but then on the other side, Colorado is bringing in everyone in the transfer. Rhule was already asked about the culture class, and Rhule said, not at all. I think they're a competitive culture. They go recruit and get the best players they can get. They do well in school. They don't get in trouble off the field, and they compete. I respect that with what they do. Good answer. But how excited are you for this game, Pat?
Extremely. And I will say they're like 4 interesting Big Ten home games this week. We got Texas going to Michigan. We got Colorado at Nebraska. We have Boise at Oregon, classic Big Ten venue there. And Iowa State at Iowa. So we'll see a little bit more about what the Big Ten's got going on. But I think Nebraska fans and players are going to be juiced out of their minds for this game, because the old heads hate Colorado, but B, they watched Colorado not just beat them, but pound them down and then storm the field. And Nebraska really hadn't been worth storming the field for years, but Colorado did it. And that was some old school, we hate you and we're going to celebrate whooping you. And I think Nebraska fans would love nothing more than to turn those tables around, and they feel like they've got a better team and a chance to do it. Certainly better at quarterback. Jeff Sims was a disaster last year in that game against Colorado. Dylan Raiola, he's a freshman, so you never know, but he was an awfully good freshman in that opener. So I'm super excited to see the Buffaloes. They've got some extremely good individual talent. They've got some moxie. They've got playmakers. Do they have line play on both sides to protect Shedeur Sanders and to run the ball and then to, get a pass rush, which the things that they really didn't do very well against North Dakota State.
Yeah, that's a problem with Colorado, right? Is they've got these two incredible players in Shadir and in Travis Hunter, but they still struggle doing the fundamental things like blocking and tackling. Still seems to be a problem in areas. And against Nebraska, who I think can block and tackle pretty well, although we haven't seen it against great competition, that's going to be the issue. Can Colorado's defense do enough to give Shador Sanders time, one, and two, slow down Rayola and their offense, because we saw some explosive plays from them in that game. I didn't get to watch a whole lot of Nebraska, but heard that Rayola looked really, really good and really mature. All the buzz from camp seems to be real and true on him, that he's kind of mature beyond the year sort of thing. And that's going to be a tough one. I'm excited for that one, but I could also see that one being a 4-touchdown game.
I am looking for the moment Dylan Rayola tries to challenge Travis Hunter. Now, I imagine the Nebraska game plan will be, let's try not to throw at Travis Hunter. But what I know so far about Dylan Rayola is I'm going to throw it at Travis Hunter. Like, that kid wants to see if he can whip it past him. I'm looking forward to that moment. That's going to be a clash. Very, very interesting game. And Iowa fans, pace yourselves this week. Iowa and Iowa State. I know this is a big week for you. Okay. Pace yourself. We know it's going to get rowdy out there.
Get a lot of tap water in you before the weekend.
Drink some Ames water. I'm looking at you, Iowa State fans. You tend to get a little more off the rails than the Hawkeyes. hydrate. It's going to be big. All right, we'll be back right after this. Mountain West and Pac-12, which is the Pac-2, did not renew a scheduling agreement. What do we know about this, and what does it mean? The Washington State and Oregon State are going to have to basically go independent scheduling. What's the latest, Ross? You know anything?
Well, it depends. They still could. First of all, they could still at some point reach a deal. They did go over the deadline, but I think they could reach a deal. Number one, number two, I do think that Oregon State and Washington State could still individually strike deals with Mountain West teams to schedule them along with others, right? Yeah, they could piece together a schedule. There's some ACC teams, I believe, that have some openings on a schedule, including two out west, Stanford and Cal. So they could piece together things. But one wonders what this means, though, for even the future beyond the second year of this, when Oregon State and Washington State have to find a conference or have to rebuild the Pac-12. Does it have anything to do with the fact that they're not entering an agreement with the Mountain West for year two, at least not yet, that they've gone through the deadline? Does it have anything to do with the expansion penalties that are attached to this contract originally? And I'll explain a little bit of what that was, because I don't know that we talked about it on the show, but if the Oregon, there's obviously fear from the Mountain West and the Mountain West Commissioner Gloria Navarez that the Pac-12 will try to rebuild by taking some Mountain West teams. That's been out there, I think, pretty public for the last year or so, that they were going to pluck maybe the best of the Mountain West to rebuild. So before they enter their deal, wisely, the Mountain West put in this scheduling contract a clause that included very stiff penalties, as much as $60, $80 million worth of penalties, depending on how many teams, if the Pac-12 were to take Mountain West teams during this contract. It would incur extra penalties, more than just exit fees from Mountain West teams. So you do wonder if, part of the reason they're not entering year two is because they don't want to incur those penalties if they do plan on taking some of those Mountain West teams. It feels like we're a long way, or at least a few months away, from any of that happening expansion-wise, but that's the first thing that popped in my head over this.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me it's kind of we're keeping our options open. Yeah, we like to keep you on, you know, keep your number in the phone, but hey, we got some other numbers in here too. We're trying to work some things out, and that probably both the Mountain West aspires to bring in Washington State and Oregon State, and Oregon State and Washington State are like, well, we might aspire to that eventually, but only when we're out of other options. So I think they're going to keep dancing as long as they have to until they eventually, I would still think it would make sense for them to come together. But as Ross said, there's many, many, many dollars and other complications that could make that a bit of a drawn out process.
You also never know what's going to happen.
No.
Yeah. No, right. Especially with the ACC uncertainty in the situation. You hear a lot of that from the Pac-12 folks and Oregon State and Washington State folks is, look, we don't know what's going to happen with the landscape out east with the ACC. And maybe nothing will happen, but we just don't know. There's a lot of uncertainty there that could impact their future, you know? So as Pat said, I think keeping the options open for the next few months is probably a wise move.
Okay, and then briefly, you reported the NCAA was changing its thinking of extending its redshirt rules to all sports, the football redshirt rules. What's going on there?
Yeah, so like as part of the House settlement, a lot of NCAA rules need to change, amateurism rules, and they're going to start on a year-long review of NCAA rules and like change all these things and update these rules to align with the House settlement. And one of them, I think the biggest one probably is, as you mentioned, the redshirt rule. You know, there's a redshirt rule in football where you can play a fifth season in a fifth season up to a certain amount. It's 4 regular season games and then still take a redshirt. That exists in no other sport except wrestling, where you can play even more than one snap of a fifth season and still preserve your ability to take your redshirt. And they're thinking about spreading that rule, basically having the football rule for all sports, which basketball and baseball coaches I heard from over the weekend rejoice, because you can imagine, you know, a basketball player plays one minute of one game and that's it, right? Use their eligibility. So now each sport will have to decide how much of that season that they can play to take a red shirt. It'll probably be around 25-30% of the regular season contest. So in basketball, around what, Pat, like 8-10 games or so, something like that maybe. And baseball, maybe a little more than that. The baseball is a longer schedule. So there's that change, which is a pretty big change. I think the other change, and we may have talked about this a while because it's been discussed for a long time now, and it's the elimination of the national letter of intent, getting rid of it and basically rolling national letter of intent benefits into just regular financial aid agreements, which now will come with obviously revenue sharing agreements too. And all of this will be that's what players will sign, you know, going forward. There's some other changes too, but a lot of minuscule stuff. I mean, players will be able to take prize money before they enroll. You know, that used to not be a possibility. Players overseas, Dan, like in soccer, European players can maybe play a few games actually professionally as long as they don't take money from the team and actually then still enroll in college. So there's some like pre-enrollment changes as well.
Lightening up here. Lighten up.
I see that.
I like that.
I see that.
Yeah, I think all these kids, I mean, let's let them play, right? Let them play. All right. We have an update here on People's Court. Wrap this up. You know, we've covered extensively the case of Vera Liddell, the woman in Illinois. She worked at the food services for school district Harvey and was found guilty of stealing $1.5 million in chicken wings.
Yeah.
More than 11,000 cases of chicken wings that she bought and then apparently resold to pay for a gambling habit. Described as a sweet woman with a gambling problem. And she funded it with the illegal chicken wing.
This is how she funded her gambling problem?
Yeah.
This has got to be
black
the most bizarre,
wings, baby.
Unusual way to fund a gambling problem.
That's why I think we decided, did she deserve to go to, I think we ruled on this at one point.
Oh.
Maybe forgot of all the stupid stories we do on the People's Court. Anyway, she was sentenced to 9 years. I don't think we thought she should get so much for the chicken wing heist. The Cook County judicial system was less impressed with the absurdity of this deal. However, Kansas City chief defensive tackle and former Mississippi State Bulldog Chris Jones put on social media that I will pay for the wings that she stole to get her free.
Oh, my.
Out of nowhere, Chris Jones is willing to drop $1.5 million because he feels for Vera Liddell, 68-year-old woman going to the Hooskaw for 9 years, whatever, for stealing chicken wings. So he's willing to drop $1.5 million, and legally this wouldn't hurt. Let's put it that way. Making restitution would help. Perhaps they would lower the sentence, but much to be seen. It's not as simple as just here's the chicken wings back. One of the red flags here was they don't serve chicken wings to high school and middle school kids because of the bones. Because
okay,
someone's going to choke, right? So they do chicken nuggets. Sure. Or boneless wings, as we of course debated. So you're not, I mean, because I was like, what school do you get like wings? That's like pretty sweet. Right.
I would go there.
How psyched are you if it's wing day?
Yeah, I'd transfer there.
Absolutely. Hot. I mean, different sauces. This would be great. Now, that was part of what caught their attention. 11,000 cases of chicken wings at a place that does not serve chicken wings.
She didn't cover her tracks.
Yeah, there was some problems. Yeah, exactly. So, but I bring the People's Court together on the case of Vera, or Vera or whatever. If Chris Jones buys the wings, should she get out? Justice 40.
You know, it's interesting. I guess what tugs at your heartstrings and where you want to give your money charitably and to the gambling addict chicken wing thief. I mean, you know, okay. I mean, I have some sympathy for her for sure, but that's an interesting move by Chris Jones. I would be willing to reduce her sentence. Certainly. I don't want to put a 68-year-old gambling addict in prison for 9 years. So, get her some addiction therapy and cut her sentence to like 2 years and have Chris Jones go and distribute the wings to the high schools that didn't get them to begin with. Let those kids have a celebratory wing day wherever the heck this is in Chicago.
Chris Jones's addition to this story.
He's not even from Chicago. Bizarre. He's from Houston, Mississippi.
No, like, this is a fellow Bulldog, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. You know, Mississippi State guys have big hearts. He's from Houston, Mississippi, a small town in Mississippi. And he plays in the Kansas City Chiefs. Why is he dipping into this, like, into this story? I don't know, but God bless him.
Bizarre. Maybe he's got a grandma who's a gambling addict. Who knows?
Get out in those river boats.
Yeah, there you go. That Tunica. Yeah, Vicksburg. Yep, got to watch it. Jeez, that's weird. Maybe it's just a thing with chicken wings. He wants to set the wings free, Dan.
Would you? So what do you think? Would you?
I don't know. I mean, flip a wing, Dan. Flip a wing and see how it lands.
I like the idea of like a wing fest. I don't think she stole the chicken wings over. I mean, those chicken wings would be expired by now. You don't want to
eat those
2019,
wings.
2019,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Also, I'm fascinated. I've read like six stories on this, including the New York Times. No one could explain the underground black market chicken wing. Am I eating stolen wings ever? I mean, what is happening? Where is this chicken wing?
Look, she's, you know, let's say she's got a, you know, like a Ford Explorer. She pulls up somewhere and opens the back trunk and says, I got, you know, cases of chicken wings to sell you. Marks them up a
little
bit.
Hopefully she's got them cold.
Oh, yeah.
11,000? 11,000 cases of chicken wings?
She's making periodic deliveries. Like every Tuesday in the neighborhood. She's going to
Where is she keeping them, even at her house?
What is going on? I get that there's some shady like restaurants be like, hey, I get half marked off chicken wings. I'm just going to do it, whatever. But like, I understand like the underground diamond market or something. I don't know, but how many restaurants are there out there getting this little old lady's dropping on the way to the riverboat?
The number of things you could do to fund your gambling habit, this would be like low on the list.
It worked for a while.
Yeah. I mean, what if she won? She could have paid it back if she'd just been a little luckier at the slots or whatever.
Maybe this is some deal she's doing with the casino buffet where she's owed money.
Maybe that would be a twist.
Casino buffet chicken wings.
There you go.
Yeah. Careful.
Inside job.
I'm always excited to have a chicken wing, but this is even more exciting because you don't know if it's a stolen wing or not. So someone's sitting around being like, those wings I had in 2019 in a kind of shady little joint in Chicago might have been stolen. It's the stolen wings. Anyway, enjoy your wings, whether they're hot or not. I guess you get hot wings, right? Hot wings. There you go. All right, we'll be back Thursday with we'll do Race to the Case. We'll pick all the big games. It's a bunch of good games this weekend. So excellent week two. Week one was fantastic. Everyone's fired up for the season. We appreciate everybody listening, sharing us on social media, hunting us out, watching us on YouTube, all of that. Thank you for that. We're excited for the season, obviously, and we will talk to you later.